Today with Joe Nash on Limerick's Live 95 FM.
Now, renowned psychologist Oliver James has written a provocative new book, Not in Your Genes, claiming that parents are the cause of their children's mental health issues later in life. Is it the case that mental health comes down to nurture and not nature? Psychologist Declan Ahern is with us this morning to discuss this more. Good morning to you, Declan.
Hi, Gillian.
I suppose parents get blamed for just about everything else. Sure, they may as well blame us for the mental health problems as well.
Well, I mean, I think for Oliver James, you know, the controversial writer, and he likes to be provocative, I think, in the way he writes. But I certainly wouldn't want to be using words like blame or fault. I don't think that achieves anything. So when we talk about parents being to blame or being at fault, I think we're missing what we're trying to achieve from a psychological point of view in terms of trying to address problems.
But I think the problem with this is, because I read the article, and he probably didn't use the word blame or fault anywhere, but parents are kind of, as soon as the children arrive, you suddenly acquire a big amount of guilt. It just comes with being a parent. It's certainly mothers anyway. I think they give it to you in the maternity hospital as you're leaving. Here's your package of guilt. You carry that with you now until they're grown adults or even beyond. And, you know, you read something like this and you just kind of feel, when he's saying that all the problems are caused up until the age of three by parents and how you raise your kids. But, and I immediately felt guilty reading it.
I suppose if I could just put the positive kind of spin on that, right, which is that basically that's a good news story, which is that that means that there is something we can do to actually facilitate and enable and nurture our children, as opposed to we are helpless and there's nothing we can do. Okay, so that's the difference. The way I would look at it is that there's something that we positive we can take from this, which is that it's not just that our mental health problems are genetically determined, and so therefore it doesn't matter what way we raise our children, but that by looking at how we raise our children and how we, and not just our parenting, but the environment in general, is how our mental health and well-being can be affected. And we can do something about that. We can't do anything to change our genetic compilation. Everybody is prone to something. There's not one of us on the planet that hasn't got some genetic predisposition to some sort of ailment or mental health issue. If you go back through our generations, you'll find within one or two generations for any of us, there's some form of mental health issue. So it's not so much the fact that there's some sort of a master race that has no genetic weaknesses. We all have those weaknesses. The issue is, how can we ensure that those weaknesses aren't exposed? So that the best example for that, Gillian, would be, you know, having a really well-built house on solid foundation, being exposed to the elements and ferocious storms. Now, no matter how well a house is built, if a tornado appears, the cracks will begin to appear on that house. And those cracks will appear at the weakest point. And every one of us have some weak point. And the only way we can prevent those weaknesses from appearing is to make sure that when storms appear, that we're able to dilute them, that we're able to abate them, that we're able to deal with them, rather than allowing the cracks to become full exposed to crumbling of our house.
Yeah, we were only speaking about it in the last hour, about the impact debt is having on people's mental health.
Yeah.
I suppose debt would be one of those storms.
It would, and then it's a question of facing how can we deal with the debt and how can we deal with the fear, things like the shame and the guilt around running up debts. How can we come up with practical solutions? And, you know, again, the issue here for me at least is that let's not always look for somebody or something else to blame for our mental health, because when we do that, we disempower ourselves. So if it's debt, let's not blame the banks or blame the government, but let's look and see what we ourselves can do to deal with our own life circumstances rather than feeling that we're the helpless victims all the time. And that's what I would be saying and encouraging to parents. We're not helpless, even though in my work I come across parents who sometimes feel very helpless in the face of very demanding and challenging children or very challenging life circumstances, that we need to empower ourselves to realise, listen, we can do something about this. Let's not feel that we can be dictated to by the authorities or by other forces that are somehow going to control how we want to live our lives. So this is a very positive kind of view to be taking of what we know from a psychological point of view, from the scientific evidence of what can be achieved. There are lots of things we can do as parents and as a society to enable and facilitate good mental health and well-being. And let's get on and do those things rather than, and everybody, you know, people who know me know that I have an aversion to kind of medicalizing our mental health problems, because once we go down that route, we end up avoiding facing up to the very things that we need to deal in our lives. So the genetic biological marker route is very much leading us down towards the medicalization of mental health problems. And whilst, of course, there's a place for medicine, and there always will be, let's not hang the solution to our problems on medicine all the time, particularly when it comes to mental health issues. That's just me from my 30 years of working in the business and dealing with people's struggles. This is not something that we can ignore or avoid. We've got to face up to the struggles, the real struggles that are there for people and how they can empower themselves to do something about it.
Talk to me a little bit about what Oliver James says about those crucial first 3 years, and that, I mean, he says any damage that might be done could be done up until the age of three. What sort of damage could parents do?
But again, damage, it comes across as a very kind of threatening kind of a term, doesn't it, that you have a damaged child. We all know, and it's been known for many years, and the Jesuits, I think, saw it long before maybe anybody else, that the formative years are the first, up to the first 7 years, in fact. But certainly, even the first 3 years, they are very significant. Even the experience of the baby in the womb are significant in terms of their experience of trauma, in terms of their experience of neglect, or even of tragedies that can affect people. So in the first 3 years, you're certainly are very malleable, and as you grow older, you become more rigid. So the good thing, I suppose, for young kids is that they're very resilient to facing up to some of these challenges, but impressions can be made. And I suppose what he's particularly talking about are the attachment mechanisms that form between a parent, a mother and child in particular. Those attachment linkages that are formed in the first 3 years, you know, they are last a lifetime. And, you know, they have a very significant role. The ability to make contact with another human being is that mother-child connection. That attachment formation in the first 3 years is, as we know in our psychological therapies, is of the utmost significance. And a lot of our adult psychotherapy is actually going back to redress those attachment bonds if they have been any way disturbed or damaged. So he's right, and we know that those first 3 years are significant. But that's not to say that, well, if we haven't done it right in the first 3 years, we might as well give up on our children for the rest of their lives that they're permanently damaged. That certainly isn't the case. These are learnt behaviours. We can unlearn, we can relearn, we can modify and change. But if we get off to a good start, it helps. It does help, you know.
Yeah, but what strikes me is odd. I mean, him saying it's not in your genes, it's not in your makeup. A mother might raise five or six children and would be of the opinion that she's done it the same way for each of the five or six children, yet later on in life, one may develop mental health problems and the others do not. Surely that points to the fact that it was in that child's genetic makeup or whatever, their physiology, that they were prone to it and the others were not.
Well, I mean, again, the evidence doesn't hold up to that in that, you know, one person may develop depression at a certain point in their life and maybe the other children don't. But you look at the other life stories of the other children and see what has happened to them and what other kind of circumstances, what other issues have emerged, what other ways they have faced up to life. Some of it is a personality predisposition, certainly. And I know, I mean, I have three children myself, grown-up adults, and you can see different personalities in all of them. None of them, it doesn't mean that any one of them is particularly pathological compared to the next, but your different personalities will face up to life situations differently. Some will deal with it by resorting to going into an addictive kind of behaviour. Others may develop a depression. Others may rise above it and be resilient and use achievement in life as a way of overcoming their deficits. So there is kind of room for every individual to develop and find their own way. You kind of arrive in this world with a kind of a package. And then it's up to you to see, and your environment, to see how that package can be moulded best. And every single person is unique and individual. So when I hear people say, oh, they're all raised the same, and, you know, the same parents, and they're all, you know, nobody's life story is the exact same. You know, my brothers and sister and myself, we all had different journeys. Even though we were the same parents, we all brought up in what we would have thought was a very healthy environment. But we all had different experiences along the way. So it's very simplistic just to say that, you know, well, we were brought up in the same family, so, you know, we should all be the same. But that doesn't hold. I mean, that's not the way it is. We all have a different, each individual has a unique story and a unique journey, and their parenting and their family life is a significant part of that. But even their place in that family can change their views of life and the way they deal with life. So it's a little bit more complex than just having a straightforward comparison between siblings. And it's not to take away from the fact that, yes, indeed, there are predispositions. But all I'm saying is that everybody is predisposed to something. There's nobody, you know, there was the head of the German race back in the 1940s who had a little moustache who thought he could create a master race where nobody was prone to anything. And we saw where that ended up. When as a society, we try to create the idea that there's a master race. A lot of racism comes out of that viewpoint, which is that we're all perfect and these other people in some ways are inferior to us. Everybody is inferior to the extent that we all have deficits. We all are predisposed to some vulnerable factor, and we just need to learn about ourselves, learn about how to manage those vulnerabilities, and parents certainly have a huge role to play in creating what John Bowlby called the secure base of the family unit as a great base, a base to build on. We have to modify, we've made adaptations, but nobody should be going around feeling guilty or blaming themselves. What they should be asking themselves is, what can I do to make my child's experience the most positive experience possible? And I see parents, unfortunately, who lose confidence in their ability to parent. They lose confidence and trust in themselves to draw the line and to say no to their children because they feel, well, if I say no, maybe they'll get upset and maybe they'll get depressed. Children need to be given lines and boundaries and limits to what they can do. Otherwise, you have children growing up feeling that everything is possible and they can do whatever they want and they have no boundaries. So I find parents losing confidence and trust in their ability to parent. I also see many parents who have a very perverse idea of what it means to parent and to love children. And I see the fallout from that.
What's a perverse way to love children?
Punishing them. You know, by making them kneel on hard steel girders to put imprinting on their knees so that they'll be punished for doing something wrong. And this is their sign of being loved. You know, I didn't think
that happened in this country at all.
It happens in the 21st century, Julian, it happens. And I can, you know, put the hairs on the back of your neck in terms of the ways in which, and this isn't every family, but let's not fool ourselves into thinking that that everything is rosy in the garden.
There's a culture of that in the States. I mean, they have, we've heard a couple of horrific stories recently. So some child being punished with boiling water, another child being put in an oven.
Yeah.
And there's this kind of Southern American, very religious, disciplinarian culture there. And so those stories don't always surprise me. But
they're not all in the Southern States of America, I can assure you.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, all I'm saying is that we as parents have a huge role to play. We need to look at our parenting, not to feel guilty about it, because that gets us nowhere, not to be blaming ourselves for it, because that gets us nowhere, but ask ourselves, are we doing the best we can do to be loving? And if we don't know how to love and to be loving, well, then let's go and talk to somebody who might be able to explain it to us and to talk us through it. But I can assure you that there's some parents out there who are totally lost in their ability to understand how to manage their children.
Do you think this book, Not in Your Genes, is worth reading?
Well, if you're interested in provocation, I suppose I'm not interested in people reading it as a way of punishing themselves. If people read stuff for just to broaden their, their horizons. I read The God Illusion by Richard Dawkins. You know, I don't perhaps believe in it, but it certainly helped me to understand another point of view. So, if you want to inform yourself, as long as you don't use it to whip yourself and to beat yourself up and say, oh, I mustn't be a good parent. Parents do a marvellous job. Everybody has the best intention in the world. Some people lose their way. They need a bit of support. They need a bit of guidance and advice. And we need to invest in that. We need to invest in parenting skills, the ability to, and the mental health of parents, by the way. I mean, the mental health of parents has a direct impact on the mental health of their children. So, you know, parents need to, I mean, I work with parents with a view to improving their mental health specifically so that they can help the mental health of their children. So there's a knock-on, a ripple effect from one generation to the next.
Yeah, I remember once hearing, you know, if mammy's not happy, nobody's happy. So very important for the parents to concentrate on their own happiness.
To look after them, self-care for the parents, you know, if the parents aren't looking after themselves, you know, I mean, Tony Humphries many years ago told me when I was training with him, love others, you know, he quoted the Bible, love others as you love yourself. He said, we're not great at loving ourselves. So if we could love ourselves, we will actually automatically show love to other people, your children in particular. So I think it's important that we recognise that. And on the genetic line, I suppose, if I finish on the Serenity Prayer, not that I'm a religious speaker by any means, but the Serenity Prayer is a great way of understanding what we can do and what we can't do. Okay, which says, give us the serenity to change the things we can, the courage to accept the things we can't, and the wisdom to know the difference. And science is trying to be that wise man to know the difference between what we can and cannot do something about. We cannot change our genes. We could do an awful lot to change our behaviour.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there for this morning. Psychologist Declan Ahern, thanks very much for joining
us. All right, Julian.
On Limerick Today.
Limerick Today with Joe Nash on Limerick's Live 95 FM.